Welcome to Unyielded, Thriving No Matter What. This podcast is for those who are committed to thriving no matter where they are on that journey. And I say journey because thriving is not about achievement. It is not a destination. It's about engagement. It's about being energized by our life. My name is Bobby Kaler, and I'm your host. And I'm so excited to be on this journey with you. I mentioned that it's a journey, and you might find yourself anywhere along that path. You may be starting out, you may be mid-career, or you may be considering your next career. You might be an entrepreneur or a salesperson, or you may be that person who just feels like something's calling to you and it's time for a change. My mission is to provide stories that inspire us so that when challenges show up, we will choose to persist. I will also provide practical skills, perspectives, and ideas that will help us create the habits of thriving and flourishing. Because at the end of the day, it is all about providing hope, knowledge, and assurance that we can all be more fulfilled and successful if we choose. Let's dive in to today's episode. I've known today's guest for many years. He is the president of Aslan Training and Development, where he leads the charge to bring truth to the market. That being other-centered makes you more effective in sales, as a leader, and as a person. And it's more fulfilling. When he is not hard at work, he volunteers his time on a variety of boards, he is a devoted husband and father, and he spends as much time as he can out on the water with family and friends. His name is Mark Lampson, and I cannot wait for you to meet him. Mark, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Bobby, for having me.
You bet. When I first started thinking about launching the podcast, I thought, you know, your name came to mind as someone who would be really good as a guest, because I've always admired how intentional you are with like your life, how you stay balanced with your family. And so I thought, hey, you'd make a perfect guest for that.
Flattered by your invitation. I haven't really thought about it that way. I guess I've unintentionally been intentional, but no, I appreciate you asking. There's no guarantees in life. I've had a more fortunate life than most in terms of just I mean, I've listened to some of your guests, Bobby, and you and other people. I've had some things in your life happen that are challenges. The podcast is Unyielded, to thrive no matter what. I look at me and say it's been pretty easy. You know, there's no guarantees. And I think there's a few things that I think along the way I would want to tell my kids. And I don't know if they're listening to podcasts on in the middle of YouTube Minecraft videos, but at some point maybe they'll run into this thing.
And be like, hey, you know, dad knew what he was doing.
Yeah, that's not as dumb as I thought he was. I don't know what age that happened for us. For me, it was in my 20s somewhere, I think.
So you've got a few years to go, Mark.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. But, yeah, so what are some of those things?
I think that as I reflect on my life, as I really work with others and coach and train and manage and lead others, the number one barrier to success is not what you think it is. There's a lot of discussion about success, but if we can agree or accept that the definition of success is realizing your goals, then I think that the reason more people aren't successful has nothing to do with their talent, skills, knowledge, ability, work ethic, attitude, or all those things. It's that they're not sure what their goal is, and therefore it's impossible to be successful. I have some friends that I have one particular friend in mind that is successful. I'm not sure how I make air quotes on a podcast, but it's they're successful. You know, they're a big time Wall Street person, and financially they've done well. They have all the material things that they need, but I know that they're very unhappy. Because why? Because when we don't have goals, I think what's even worse is we take them from somewhere else. Mm-hmm. Our society pushes things. Well, you're supposed to get out of high school, and you're supposed to go to a four-year college, and then you get a job that's entry level, and then you do this, and then you have a family, and you're, you know, have 2.3 kids and a picket fence and all those things. And I think the world's given us a lot of bad information about what success looks like. And if we don't have goals, we're likely to take them. And from our parents, and this
that's right.
You had Wall Street parents, and they thought Wall Street was cool because they were happy. And so they said, hey, you should go to Wall Street. And so he did. And he worked a lot of hours and made a lot of money. And but it's not what he's happy. But he was just happy when he and I were working on cars in college and getting our fingers dirty. And now he's lost his family, he's divorced. He's just not happy. He's just not happy because all those things.
But what's funny about that? Well, it's not funny. But what's interesting to me about that, Mark, is a few episodes ago that when we were recording, he is a career coach. Anthony is his name. And he was talking about this very thing, that we don't set our own goals. We take them on from society. We take them on from our parents. And then we end up, you know, 35, 40, 45. And we're like, wait a minute, what just happened to my life? And so what I'm hearing you say is kind of decide for yourself, not only what your goals are, but also how do you define success, like for yourself?
Yeah. I'm a subscriber to something called the Wheel of Life. It's not actually a subscription. You can just go online and find it. There's lots of them. The Wheel of Life is the wheel you ride on. Imagine riding on a unicycle, which I think is really cool to do, but I have tried and never could.
Guess who can?
Literally ride on a unicycle. I haven't been able to so far. How's that?
Rick can. He actually had a unicycle, believe it or not. Even when we got married, you just want to trip the guy sometimes because he's so athletically gifted.
Juggling on their unicycle. I'm like, I'm like, really?
I can't do either one. I'm completely lost. But anyway. But
we ride on a unicycle. It's a wheel. There's a bunch of spokes. And the spokes are the things in our life, our career, our family, our friends, our social network, and ourselves, you know, our physical well-being, our spiritual, mental well-being. There's a lot of ways you can define it. But if you look at that and lay that out, the length of each spoke is determined by how successful you are in that area. Again, success is the definition of defined as realizing your goals. So whatever career success looks like, perfect. Give yourself a score. And so draw that out. And when you draw that out, that's your wheel. Now connect those dots. And for a lot of us, it's really bumpy, and it's bumpy from time to time. It was, you know, bumpy for me at one point when I got unbalanced and I was not really successful in my career, and it hurt my family and my wheel got really out of balance. And so when we feel like we're just riding on that really, really rough road time after time, that's why your wheel is totally messed up.
Yeah. So I'm curious there, Mark, because I remember you spoke about, oh my God, we were together at Aslan. I want to say it was 2012 or 2013. And you spoke about the Wheel of Life and I loved it. And I've always been curious, what are some examples of what's on your wheel?
That's a good question. I think that's a great question. I think I share the wheel with my, you know, lifelong partner, my wife, Tyra, and we'll sort of talk together because my wheel is never by myself. But I stop in, you know, my career, I feel good about it. What am I trying to decide here about, you know, where am I on my wheel? My wheel feels pretty smooth right now. If I'm being transparent, I would say from a family perspective, just feel good about where we are and what we've done. And from a career, I would say I'm working on my physical self and my physical health and my ability to eat right and exercise and do those things. And, you know, they're all related because when you spend time on one versus the other, I think that it just kind of wears down your spokes because that's what happens. It wears down when you have spokes that are short and spokes are long and it's not a circle. If you have any physics listeners, right, it wears that, grinds that down over time. I think, I'm not sure if this is my wheel, but I want to thank John Ledsworth. John Ledsworth in 1994 came to APC and we were some young managers that had some training. And he says, the first thing I want you to do is create a dream list. And I was 23 years old. And he said, you know, create a dream list. And it's got no basis of time, money, just nothing. Just let yourself go. Like, what do you dream of? And I wrote that down. And I would say that's been, what, 26 years? I would say 20 out of the last 26 years, sometimes around that pause around the holidays where we make New Year's resolutions that we break and all those things, we organize our pencil drawer or whatever you do around the holidays, I pull out my dream list.
You still have it.
I still have it right now to my computer and typed in dream list. It would come up. Some of those things have been crossed off. They've been crossed off. I haven't fulfilled it. My dreams, some of my dreams have been fulfilled. Some of them have changed because they no longer are dreams of mine. Your priorities change, and that's okay. Yeah. And I changed them. I didn't. Someone didn't take them away. And I've added things. I'm going to keep working on that dream list. So have a dream list and work on it and pursue, have goals, write goals, pursue your goals, track your goals. And that's what success is when you start realizing some of those goals.
Yeah. So now if I heard you right, Mark, it sounds like maybe some of the things have been crossed off because maybe the dream has changed a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
That's good.
Yeah, dream has changed. It's just not important to me anymore. I don't know. Just one thing comes to mind. I used to have on my list to get a Series 7 license. I think that's the right word, certification. But, you know, it's the trade stock. I've always been in the stock market. And I said, you know, I'm going to get a Series 7. I mean, we pay brokers commission to do those things for us because they have a Series 7 and they're licensed in the state. Well, I'm going to go get a Series 7. I mean, I don't
know
what it is.
In your spare time.
Sure, exactly. You read some books. It's still an interest of mine, but to be honest, no, I'm not willing to spend that time away from the things that I like to get a Series 7.
Yeah. So
Brendan, my advisor Brendan, and Gabe have Series 7s, and they do just fine. So I don't need to do one. How's that?
So you're good with that. But I like that because you know what? Sometimes things do change. And instead of being like, oh, I wrote it on my dream list, I have to be dogmatic. It's okay to change.
Yeah. Well, it's change. Yeah. It's change. And, you know, I think, maybe a thought number two I had is we're talking about have goals. I think about when I was 17, you know,
that's right.
Leaving high school, going to college. I mean, there are some people who I respect who says, I want to do this. I mean, when they're young, they're like, this is what I want to be and do in life. That's awesome. I don't know what percentage that is. I know it's not my two kids. What do you want to do? I don't know. You know, I'm going to go drive around in my car. Perfect. When you run out of gas, what's next? You know, I'll say this. It's easier. I've learned this. It's easier to know what you don't want to do than what you do want to do. So start there. Start checking some things off. I've done that with my kids. He said, well, I'm not really a science person. Perfect. Cross that off. You know, I will say this. You have to try things. I mean, this is the basics of food. I mean, this is the basics of food 101. I want my kids to try everything because you have no idea what you're going to like, what you're not going to like. So if it's edible and you're not going to get sick.
It's not poisonous.
It's not poisonous. Yeah. Yeah. Eat it. If you don't like it, that's fine. But if you do, you'd be surprised. Tomatoes. I'm not a picky eater. But I do not eat raw tomatoes at 49
Seriously?
Years old. I do not eat. Now, I grew up in New Jersey. It's the Garden State. We had tomatoes in our garden. My dad would pick them. We'd pick them. I'd pick them. And you take them, and then you get them out of the basket, and you go lay them around the windowsill of the patio where the sun's supposed to, like, get them red or something like that. But then sometimes they'd rot and get all juicy and all. Anyway, it's just like tomatoes were, like, oozing out of our house. And people are like, I've got some tomatoes. You got any tomatoes? We're having tomatoes. All the talk about tomatoes. Like, shut up.
Now, down at the tomatoes.
I like ketchup. I like salsa. I like sauce. I like cooked tomatoes where they're mashed up, even little chunks of raw tomatoes. But I do not like a raw tomato on my salad or on my sandwich or those kind of things. But you have to try. And I've tried them. And the last time I tried a tomato was when my oldest son started eating regular food.
Oh, my goodness.
And we had tomatoes, some kind of tomatoes for dinner. I knew I hated them. So I went in with a bad attitude, I have to admit. But I said to myself, if I want my kids to eat everything, I have to do the same thing. So this was intentional. And I intentionally took a big piece of tomato and stuck it in my mouth. And I gagged my ass off for the next half an hour because it was so god awful. And I've never had another tomato since. And I'm going to cross it off my dream list as well. So,
like, never doing it again. Okay. So, like, what is so
the
awful?
Consistency. It's the consistency. It's something about it. Just, I don't know. Just all the little membranes and gushy stuff and the seeds. But try things. You know, try things. So I've tried that. I don't like it. I tried wrestling when I was, I'm not built for wrestling. I wasn't built for wrestling when I was a little kid. I tried wrestling and I stuck it out all year. One time I won one match by 1 point. Otherwise, I got pinned the entire time. I can totally tell you what the ceiling of the Paulsboro High School gymnasium looks like because I watched it on my back. My mom said, she talked to somebody in church and said, well, you know, should do dance and things. Bobby, I was in a ballet class for like a fall. Took ballet. Come on. You see that? Come on, that's it.
Yes. Okay. How old were you when you took ballet?
I was probably 9 years old, 9 year old boy playing football on, you know, at night and weekends and somewhere squeezing in a ballet class here and there.
Hey, Lynn Swan took ballet. So if it's good enough for Lynn Swan.
And he and I have the same grace. You know, same grace and athleticism.
I don't know that you played the same position. I'm just going to go out on a limb.
Yeah, but the intentional thing, I think, you don't know what you want, fine. So pick off what you don't want and then try things. You know, my story was what? I was good at math and science. People said, well, you're good at math and science. You should be an engineer. And, you know, okay, that sounds good. Again, I took a little bit of society, not so much a goal, but, you know, direction. Okay, I did some research. Well, in 1984, you know, computers seem like they're going to be important. So I signed up for electrical engineering. I got all my little college brochures mailed to me with the little business reply cards. I started going through them, making a list, applied at some schools, got in and went. And pretty somewhere in the middle, I kind of really didn't like engineering, didn't like the classes, wasn't excited about it. I was interested in the topic, but I just didn't see myself being that person. And I had a co-op at Mobile as an engineer. It just all told me it wasn't my lifelong passion. Now I stuck it out. I finished. I got a degree. I learned how to solve problems. It got me my first job. But it's okay to say it's not what I want to do. But don't quit everything. I mean, it's a balance. It's a total balance.
Well, Mark, let me ask you this. How did you know that it wasn't for you?
Because I got crushed on all of my labs and tests and got the worst scores of my life, and I completely sucked it. My grades were terrible.
Was wrestling all over again?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I did well in high school, but I did not do well in college. It was a struggle. It was just about my interest. I mean, there were certain classes that I was interested in. I took like an oceanography class, and that was interesting, but I just didn't really care about some of the, there's some interesting things I learned, but it just wasn't really exciting to derive things and formulas. It just didn't get me excited.
Yeah. I think the care piece, what you just said, is really important. Like, cause if you really loved it, you're smart. Like, you could have, like, you know, but if we don't care about something, I think it's really hard to work on it because we just lack the motivation.
There's some DNA that we have, you know, but
yeah.
I would just say on this last point, like, as you try things, keep an open mind, be willing to change. I went to school. This was, you know, I've been thinking about being on your show. I said, well, what are some things that were important to me? I think that helped shape where I am in terms of just my satisfaction with life right now. And that's my fraternity. So I was a Pike, Pi Kappa Alpha. I went to college in September of, 88, saying that no way am I going to join a fraternity. They're just a bunch of people who just drink and they pay to have friends. I'm not going to join a fraternity. That's stupid. And 30 days later, I was right up in front of the pack, leading the charge. Oh my God, this is awesome. And, you know, became a pledge and, like, you know, doing all the dumb pledge stuff.
Oh my goodness.
And I learned, because the people I met were awesome. We have a slogan: scholars, leaders, athletes, and gentlemen. So we recruit slags. Well, that's our motto. I'm just good people, surround myself. I mean, you know, I watched a YouTube video somewhere the other day. A guy talked about know, when you're in your forming years, look at your friends and that's your future. Look at your friends and that's your future. Look at who's around you and that's where you're going to be. Hmm. And that turns out to be true for me. And I'm glad I went to that group. I learned a lot more than engineering about, you know, when you're living with 30 or 40 guys in the same house, your same age, and you're trying to have a, you know, regulation style government, and there's officers and elections and rules. It's really good experience. And I'm close friends with a lot of my fraternity brothers today and a big fan of the fraternity.
Wow.
So 30 days, what changed my mind? Just having an open mind. You know, when they first knocked on my door, instead of saying, tune out, I listened. I listened to Robert Gosnell when he came to my door in my, you know, in Hall in Rensselaer and said, hey, man, what do you think? And I listened and I was open. And because I was open, it changed my life, honestly. I mean, a fraternity brother ended up at APC and referred me and got my first job. So,
wow. Okay. So do you remember when he showed up at your door, do you remember what it was that made you think, oh, maybe this wouldn't be as bad as I thought?
It was him, just cool guy, connected. It was easy to talk to him. You know, it was easy to relate. He'd say, how you doing? How's the food? You know, just a typical, because he was a sophomore. So he was there, you know, he'd been there last year. And, you know, on the flip side, as a fraternity, we have a very, what I want to say, structured, organized recruiting approach. I mean, we have a big retreat before rush starts.
Wow.
About, you know, who we're going to look for and what we're going to say and how we're going to approach them. And it's effective at getting people to be open to join. One of the best decisions I've made.
I love that. Just be open, because we don't know, right? Why judge it? No. See, tomatoes, you might change your mind someday about tomatoes.
Yeah, more. I'm not open to tomatoes. No, not open to tomatoes. Know what you want. And if you don't know what you want, put on what you don't know. Try to figure stuff out. But I'll say this is maybe a counterpoint, or is a third point, not a counterpoint, but if you're trying something, this is what I believe. Life's a train. We're on a big train ride. You're either on the train or you're not on the train. Like, you can't, I was going to say subway, but not everyone's been on a subway. You know, if you try to squeeze in the door where you're like half in and half out and the door's like jam on you. Like, something's got to give, right?
You can't stay there.
Like opening and closing. I mean, just like, do something.
And in or out.
Yeah. It doesn't really care about your bag. I've seen that happen. You're in and the bag's out and that goes away. But you're either on board. So if you're on board, give it 100%. Give it 100%. Be all in. Give it a college try. I'm not sure if that's a real word anymore. Give it a real try. You know, I say give it a couple of cycles. If you have a job that's seasonal, it's got to be a couple of seasons. Or, you know, if you happen to join, I mean, we've had people join Aslan. Some people came in when we were just really, really, really crazy busy. Everything was disorganized and was an awful time for them to come on board. They're like, I don't know if I can handle this. I said, just, you know, hold tight. Hold tight. Well, it'll settle down. And I know you're trying to learn things and it's coming too fast. It'll settle down. And it did. You know, it settles down. So it's a balance of never quit with, you know, being honest when it's not right for you. And I'm a never quit guy. My dad taught me never quit. He said, you want to go for wrestling? Go for wrestling. He says, and what you're signing up for is for the season, not for a lifetime. But for the season.
I love
that. My oldest son, I want to play AAU basketball. Okay. You got to make it. Go to a tryout. Made it. Perfect. Congratulations. That's awesome. Super proud of you. Went to practice. I don't know. The gym wasn't working. The hoops weren't down. They were totally disorganized. They went in there and the coach yelled and screamed and ran suicides the entire time. And he came home at a really young age, you know, almost in tears. I quit. Whoa, time out a second. You quit what? AAU. What are you quitting? Well, it's just hard. Okay. So practice was hard because everybody was new. We show up to the gym. Nobody was ready for us. The hoops were still up. So the coach grabbed the whistle and started blowing the whistle and running suicides. Somebody knows what's going on. It'll get better. Don't worry about it. And I remember this. And if you're listening, Lee, I said, you're going to go to practice Thursday. He said, you can't make me. And this is at a young age. This is DNA. You can't make me. And I just said, yes, I can. And said, here's the deal. you're not going to quit because you took someone's spot.
Ooh. Mm-hmm.
Right? There's a kid who wants to play who can't, and the coach wants you. And so now you're just not holding good to your word. You get done the season and you don't like it, throw all the basketballs away. But you are going to finish the season because you signed up for that. And that's what that says when you tried out, you know, and then turned out after a couple, after the second practice, hey, that wasn't so bad. And this is awesome. And his best friend that he hangs up with all the time is a kid he met on that team. And they've been playing basketball for about 7 years together. So,
right.
You know, it's less of a parenting story, but more of a, what's the right time to quit? It's okay to quit, but not right away. You got to kind of see how this all pans out.
And I love what your dad said, right? Just for the season. If you sign up, you're playing for the season. It doesn't have to be a lifetime, but give it a real commitment.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. You know, I'm not sure if you're a Kenny Rogers fan. You Kenny Rogers
love
fan?
It. Oh my God. I had his albums as a kid.
You got to love this song, right? You know, here, here's 10 seconds on Kenny Rogers. I mean, I think that's just sound advice. I think his advice of know when to hold him and know when to fold him. And you don't fold right away, I think is my point. You're talking to a guy who, I think I'm a little stronger on the never quit side, but my point of me bringing this up is it's okay to quit at some point, but I once had it's a long story. The short story is I was in a jam. My parents were away. I had a combination lock. I was staying at my grandfather's house. Somehow my lock, my four-number lock, had the combination. It got jammed around. The combination got changed, and my bag was locked, and I couldn't get it open. And I was at my grandfather's house. It was 8 o'clock at night. There's nothing to do. I mean, you know, it's only 10,000 combinations, 0000. So what do you do? You know, I could have started at zero, gone forwards, could have gone backwards, started in the middle, but I started at 0000 and 0000. Now it's not just the pull kind. You got to turn this zeros and then you push pull.
Oh
nope.
My God.
0001. Push pull. 0002. Push pull. Mm-hmm. Yeah. 28. But I was lucky. 2873. I got it after about 3 hours of sitting there. That's never quitting, right? It's like you got to do it.
Oh my goodness.
You can't quit that. You have to get it open because you're just all jammed up and you can't ask your grandfather. It's just a big mess. But other times it's okay to quit. It's okay to quit while you're doing it. You know, the point of this is be on board 100%. That's the not halfway on, not halfway off. And so you decide where you are, like whether it's a, you know, I won the splash contest at the University of Rhode Island. Now my frame helps me win that, but I was some technique. Look, let me be honest. I went to the 3 meter board and I was the only one that did a full can opener off the 3 meter board. And it had I'm in, like, we're going to do whatever it is. It's not about, and I don't want to lean on the competitiveness. I want to lean on, are you giving it 100% effort? Two questions I've asked my kids when they got off the floor, or the court, or a game, or a match, or anything that they've done in their lives. Two questions. Did you have fun? Did you do your best? Answers to those questions are yes. Keep going. If not, let's talk about it.
Yep. Those are two great questions, though, because they're both important.
The winning is it's extra. I mean, you know, I know we're not participation trophy people either. I mean, there is winning and losing to an extent in life, but what's important to focus on, what you can mostly control, is giving your best and having fun.
And I think when you're having fun, you tend to give your best.
I think it kind of goes hand in hand. I'm a fan of a term called ikigai. I'm not sure if you've heard of ikigai. It's a Japanese term for kind of reason for being, IKIGAI. It just looks at, it says, look at the things that, what do you love? What are you good at? What do you like to do? And what does the world need? Or what can you get paid for? Some combination of those things. And in the center of your good, you love it, the world needs it, and you can be paid for it. The center of that is called ikigai. When you live there or when you work there, it's how you feel. It's fulfilled. It's good reasons. All those things. There's other things that are off to the side, like your passion. My passion passion is what you love to do and what you're good at doing. I can't really make money and the world doesn't really need it. And that's fishing.
Yeah.
So they don't need to be a fisherman. Can't make money fishing, spend a lot of money fishing, but I love it. I absolutely positively love it. It's my passion. So it gets me all fired up. So, you know, look for your, in the process of looking for goals or what you don't want to do or trying things, you're searching for that ikigai. You're searching for, you know, your path. And it's okay. It's okay. I'll say this last thing. You're on board or you're not, but it's your train. It's nobody else's train. So at APC, they said, well, you got to go to the field. I don't want to go to the field next. I don't want to be a field salesperson. Yeah, but no, I enjoy managing people. So I'm going to be a team leader. That all worked out okay. My wife and I, kids, we got married at 25. You want to have kids? I don't know. Do you? I don't know. I'll tell you what, let's wait 5 years and see what happens. So we did. 5 years ticking. Hey, how you doing? Kids? Yeah, well, this, that, and the other thing in my career, you know, blah, 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 and the house being painted and, well, you know, everything else.
House being painted.
You know,
that's a good
couple
reason,
more
Mark.
Years. Great. We'll kick the can a couple more years. 2 more years. Say, what's up? Kicked it another year. And then, I don't know, honestly, something came on Oprah, the Today Show, or something about like, women losing their fertility in their 30s. And we said, we really want kids and we need to do this now. And we had kids. And we waited 8 years and that was great. And that's great for us. Some people say you got to have kids, right? Whatever. People are in different stages, but it's okay. It's your, the train goes, you got to be on or off, but it's your train. It's nobody else's train, but stay on for a couple of stops. Don't just get off right away, but know that if the train's not going where you want it to be, it's okay to not quit, but to just get off.
Yeah. I remember, Mark, when we were talking before and you were talking about this, you said it just, when you're talking about it, you said it just fits my heartbeat. Like that's how you knew it was right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it just does. It's just how you, I mean, we're talking about fishing. I mean, I've reconnected with fishing as a passion, just taking some time to do it. I did it when I was young and I kind of got away from it because you're working and just doing different things. And as I get back to it, it's just, you know, I don't know how to say this. I mean, it does it. It gives me the tingles. Like it's just, I feel like a little kid when I start engines on a boat and I see, and when I say fishing, I should be clear. I don't actually really care about reeling in fish. I care about being on the boat, watching my family, my friends, my kids' friends be 70 miles offshore. God's majesty is in front of you. There's birds, there's whales, the water gets super blue and green. The fish that you see and catch, it's just amazing to figure out, you know, where you are and what you're doing. Your cell phones work. And just to watch the excitement of kids who have been jammed to a computer screen all day, it's just really cool. And it's what I want to do more and more and more of with people that I care about. And that's my success is doing the things I love with the people that I love, making experiences and memories. I mean, that's really what my life is built around with my parents. It's just all the memories that I have, which are I'm super fond of and appreciative of.
Yeah. Cause when you say fishing, it's not like, I mean, this is sport fishing. And could you, when we talked before, Mark, you told me this story about what your dad did on the 10 Lizzie, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is what you're talking about when you're talking about memories. And I think legacy is a little bit there too.
Yeah, it is. So my dad had a boat, had a little aluminum boat that we used to go fishing in. And we went blue fishing a few miles out in the ocean off of New Jersey coast and take friends and they catch fish. My dad, once in a while, would take pictures. And when someone kind of caught their first fish or a big fish, he took a picture. Remember the old days of pictures? You have to like have this roll to use up all the pictures. Yeah. And you got to go drop it off at some little drugstore, wait forever.
Forever.
They're half of them are all
messed
up.
Are they going to lose it?
I mean, oh my God, pictures were a big deal, right?
They were expensive to develop too.
Oh, expensive. And then he blew it up. Well, that's a whole nother process. Then you got to send that away and do it all again. So yeah, so he made an 8x10 picture for a buddy of mine. And he put a little brass plaque on it. He made it work. It said, like, you know, first blue fish, such and such a date, such and such a weight. That was just the thing we did. And I had so many, so many fond memories of fishing with my dad on this aluminum boat that we called Tin Lizzie. It's an aluminum boat and named after my mother-in-law. Tin Lizzie, just a name that stuck. So I don't know why boats are named after women, but they are. You can check me on that. Most boats, I don't know why that is, but that's what you're supposed to do. So fast forward, my dad passes away, which was the worst thing that's happened in my life. And this buddy I talked to reaches out. He says, you know, I still have that picture. Sorry about your dad. I wanted to call you. And, you know, I still have that picture in my office 40 years later. And he says, that was really meaningful to me. And that made me say, well, I'm going to go buy a boat that I've been talking about buying. And my biggest regret was I talked about buying a sport fishing boat, something that we could go 100 miles offshore and catch the thing, marlin, tuna, things with my dad that we talked about over and over and over again. And we talked about it. And there was 100 reasons why we should do it. And there were 100 reasons why we shouldn't do it. And they were all bad reasons. And I waited. And then my dad died. And then it was too late. And so I said, I think God had my buddy reach out to me to remind me, go buy the damn boat now.
Yeah.
Right. Don't wait. Don't wait until what? Until this, that, and the other thing and your schedule and the spreadsheet work. Scratch the spreadsheet. And I'm a spreadsheet guy as much as they come. I know Rick is too, but we should pull out spreadsheets someday. Hey, do you track your watering on a monthly basis or a quarterly basis?
I was going to ask if your dream list was on a spreadsheet, but I refrained from doing it.
What do you think?
It is.
What do you think? How else can you put a date on it and then prioritize it and then sort it? I mean, how else could you do that?
No other way is possible, Bobby. I'm sure. Come on.
I thought this was a credible podcast. I mean, you're talking about dream lists. You're talking about lists, not on spreadsheets. Oh, man.
It's just inconceivable. But anyway.
Yeah. So that's my advice is buy the boat, do the thing that you're not waiting for. You know, it's the best thing I've ever done. And I should have done it sooner. And there's nothing I can do about that except for, you know, so we were going to call it Tyra Ann because that's my wife's name. And I promised if we ever bought a sport fishing boat, we'd call it that. But fortunately for me, she's awesome. And I said, I can't call it Tyra Ann. It's got to be called Tin Lizzie, even though it's not tin. We still have my dad's like license plate on his truck called Tin Lizzie mounted in the cabin. And it's just Tin Lizzie lives on and it's cool.
Yeah. But that's not the only thing that lives on because you also told me like you've kind of continued your dad's tradition, right?
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's easy now. I mean, the digital pictures are easy. Yeah, we do the IGFA has, the International Game Fish Association has what they call catch certificates. For $20, you can send them some stuff, and they'll send a really cool-looking official thing. And so there's a lot of kids in southern Rhode Island that have a catch certificate for their first bluefin or whatever on Tin Lizzie. And it's just cool. It's just cool.
That's amazing.
Very, very fortunate, very, very lucky. And that's 100% my dad in me, both boating, fishing, and sharing that with people and teaching me to be other-centered, to make it about them, not you.
Mm-hmm. And it sticks with people.
And it tastes really good, too. I mean, I do keep, you know, the fish. It's good. It's yummy. Sushi.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, you light up whenever you talk about the fishing. When you said it fits your heart, like, you can just tell. Like, that's a true passion.
Yeah, it's hard to explain. It's hard to explain. I've had this particular boat for 3.5 years. It's a sport fishing boat. But, I go up. I remember looking at boats I had a dream when I was 12 years old. The boat that I have, I saw when I was really young. I was at a fishing tournament. This boat backed in. I thought was really cool. And I was kind of hanging around the dock and kind of wedging my way in closer. And the guy said, you know, hey, son, you know, you want to come check? Yeah, I want to come check out your boat. And so we got on. I'm like, oh, this is the coolest thing in the world. And I remember what kind of boat it was. This is where God's watching over me. So all this intentional stuff is just lucky. I'm going to share this story with you about, you know, purpose or intention or how things merge or how to listen for what you should be doing. And you don't know this story, but my dad was born in a farmhouse in New Gretna, New Jersey, which is as thick of the sticks as you can possibly get. And when I say a farmhouse, I mean, you know, he was like literally born in a farmhouse, like no hospital, like there's warm water and a towel and, you know, call it even and put it in a knot and, you know, little, you know, Mercurochrome or whatever they had and call it even, right? In 1939. My grandparents had an asparagus farm that was in New Gretna, and it went to the Bass River. Fast forward to the 40s, the Jersey comes along and says, we're building something called the Garden State Parkway, and we're going to take part of your land, eminent domain, build this parkway. So they take part of the land, they build the parkway, they come back and say, we're done, and you still have land on the other side that we can sell back to you. It goes down to the Bass River. And my great-grandfather said, no thanks, because we can't get to it. Like, I have to get my tractor out on the road and go around. We're just going to keep this smaller farm. My dad's farmhouse was still there. It was literally, you know, 100 feet from where the parkway is. I can still see it when I drive by exit 55 on the parkway headed south on the right-hand side. So fast forward, this piece of land gets sold. That was my grandparents' farm where my dad was born. I mean, he was literally born 500 yards from the river. Gets sold to a boat building company. They go out of business. It gets bought by another company, by Bill and Bob Healy, and they start a company called Viking Yachts in 1964. And every single Viking, including mine, was built by hand 500 feet from where my dad was born. True story.
No way.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
You go Google Viking Yacht Company and see it on the Bass River, and you can see the Bowers family farm. So that was when I was 12 years old, and that's where my dad was born, and that's what I ended up doing, as intentional as all get out. And it's just been an amazing thing. And every time I walk onto the boat and go up and push two little buttons to start engines, I get giddy. I get silly and giddy.
Oh, my goodness. That anyway. Must be great. I mean, how often do you get to feel giddy as an adult?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know?
I get excited. And God, you're like a therapist, Bobby. You're getting me to say all these things about me here. one of the things I've noticed is my nervous reaction is gagging.
Really?
Gag. When I get really nervous, I start gagging.
Wow.
I noticed this. My son had a seizure, and I thought was dead when he was 4 years old. I thought he was dead in my arms, and I started gagging. He went lifeless, limp, and I started gagging, like, uncontrollably. And it's happened when my dad was dying. There's times in my life. Well, there's times. You talk about being nervous. That was your LinkedIn post, nervous. There are times where I felt such excitement about what we were getting ready to do that I get up on the bridge of the boat, which I've driven 1,000 times, and I've been on a boat more. I've driven a boat more than I've driven a car, by far.
Really?
And I gag. I start gagging because of just the emotions. Yeah.
You're that excited, but you're not nervous. You're just that excited.
Yeah, it's just an excitement. It's just like an overwhelming feeling of, oh man, I hope we catch fish and everyone has fun. And it's a big deal for me.
Wow. Man, that just goes to how much you care.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel responsible when people have a good time.
Yeah.
You know, at the end of the day, I'd say that was lucky. I'd say that was all lucky, that the boat and everything else. I think, you know, this is another thing I would say is luck is about being prepared for an opportunity. And I can go on and on in stories of people I've seen who took classes and did things. And then all of a sudden we had a new job come up and they were well qualified. And people say, well, they were just lucky because he took Spanish classes and now there's an international assignment. No, luck's, you know, it's about make your own luck. Like, be prepared for things, be prepared for boats or things or whatever. I think about these things. Aaron Davis called me. I was in the field selling for APC, was moderately happy. And he said, you know, I had stayed in touch with corporate. I had done some things to be prepared because I always wanted to go back to corporate. I always wanted to go back and lead a team. And I did some projects and I just made it a point to stay connected for no real reason or no real promise of ever going back to corporate and being a sales manager or a sales leader. And out of the blue, I get a call from Aaron Davis that says, and I was in the Red Roof Inn by the St. Louis airport and could see the end of the runway. Bobby, you may have been there.
I have been there. You were living high on the hog market.
Uh-huh.
You were there. Oh, yep. Man.
Yep.
And, it rumbles. Woo!
And I got a call. Yeah. And I got a call. I think I don't think T.M.A. was still in business. I forget. But he called me and says, we're doing a big reorg and I want you to come back and lead this sales team. And I was lucky. I'm super appreciative of him reaching out. Another critical piece in my career, but I was prepared to take advantage. I was lucky because I had been doing the work ahead of time without any promise of anything really happening.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's not just luck. It's also that preparation. you know. But a lot of people don't see that preparation either. They just want to say, well, they're just lucky, you know.
Yeah, that's right.
A conversation with Mark is never dull. Here are some of my favorite takeaways from this portion of the interview. Number one, if we don't have goals, we take them from someone else or from what society tells us should be our goals. This goes to something that I have long believed, that we are either the author of our own life or we are a character in someone else's story. So choose to write your own story and your own life. Number two, I loved when Mark talked about the wheel of life and how he calibrates to see if he's staying in balance. It is so easy to lose track of our priorities. Number three, have an open mind. To discover what you want, you may have to try different things. Some things you will like, some things you won't. And that's okay. Cross it off the list. I mean, I guess we can't all like tomatoes. Number four, if you are on board, give it 100%. To him, this means a couple of things. One, give it a real and honest try. And two, try it for a season or a couple of cycles. You just can't try it once and give up. I love the story about how his dad would say that if you try out for a team, then you are signing up for the season, not a lifetime, but for the season, so that you can give it a real try. Number five, related to the above, it's about finding that balance between never quitting and being honest with yourself about when it's not right for you. This is something that I see a lot in coaching, and it trips people up. They think that since they've decided on a course of action, that they have to see it through to the bitter end, no matter what. No matter what new information comes in that could indicate that a new choice could be beneficial, we're going to see it through. There is absolutely nothing wrong with making a new decision when it's warranted. And I loved how Mark put it. When is the right time to quit? Number six, I found the conversation around Mark's regret about not buying the boat sooner to be very powerful. And you don't buy the boat for the possession of it, but because of the passion and the legacy attached to it, and so that you can share it with those you love before it is too late. Number seven, luck is about being prepared so that you are ready when the opportunity shows up. What's tricky about this one is that often people don't see all the work that a person does to be ready for the opportunity. And then they sort of discount the achievement by saying, well, they were just lucky. Well, maybe, but putting the work in to be prepared tends to make us luckier. In the next portion of the interview, we'll discuss humility, learning, gratitude, and the one thing that you should never, ever cheat on when it comes to your time. On another note, the new year is fast approaching, and as you know, that's the time when we rush to set goals and resolutions. Sadly, by late January, those goals and resolutions too often begin gathering dust. So to fight the gathering dust bunnies, I'm putting together a free video guide on how we can recognize if we are falling prey to one of the biggest derailers of our goals, the just wait voice. I've coached well over 3,000 people in my career, and I've seen this insidious little voice show up and whisper doubt in our ear just as we are about to act. And so instead of acting on our goals, we decide to wait indefinitely. I hate that voice, and I want to help combat it with what I've learned over the years. If you want to be alerted for when it's available, please visit unyielded.net/goalkiller. Again, this has been the Unyielded Podcast, where we are committed to bringing stories and guests who can help us all live more fulfilled and authentic lives. If you found it helpful, please consider leaving us a review on Apple, as well as sharing it with a friend, as these are the two best ways to help us share this message of hope and positivity.